From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
Our next guest, Buster Benson, is an entrepreneur and a former product leader at Amazon and Twitter. He's editor of Better Humans publication on Medium. He's a creator of 750words.com, which is all about private journaling in a safe place on the web. He's also the author of the Cognitive Bias Cheat Sheet with over 1 million reads. He's joining us now to talk about his first book, which is Why Are We Yelling? The Art of Productive Disagreement. Now, this book is for anyone who's frustrated with the state of argument in the world. Buster will help us understand how arguments work and why. And after reading his book, you'll be able to remain confident when you're put on the spot. That would be nice. Diffuse tense moments with a few strategic questions. That would also be nice. And facilitate creative solutions, even when your team has radically different perspectives. Buster Benson, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Wow. I think that everyone these days can agree that arguments never seem to be very productive. And I would say the first reason for me personally, and I know a lot of people would agree with this, is that you get this visceral reaction, this feeling in your gut, and you become hogtied by your own emotion in the argument.
Absolutely. A lot of that is self-fulfilling too, where, you know, the anxiety that we feel that this isn't going to go well is part of what makes it go poorly.
Yes, and you know, Pete and I were talking about bringing empathy into our arguments. Mostly we approach arguments by saying, how could that other person even think what they think? So if we apply empathy, though, that might be a good first step. What is our first
Absolutely.
Step?
Yeah, that's exactly what you should be doing. And one of the things that I tell people is that an argument is really about two questions. One of them is, you understanding that a person, a human being, much like yourself, does have a different perspective than you. And the other one is about whether or not you agree with it, and whether or not you think it's right for you. I think a lot of us can make so much more progress in our arguments if we just get over that first one, understanding that it's possible for another human being to have that argument, and then asking them and assuming that they have some good reasons, try to understand it from their perspective. Using that empathy is exactly the right first step.
Well, I completely disagree.
Excellent. Let's do this.
And as you can see, one of us is more comfortable with conflict than the other. how do you recommend people who are comfortable with conflict and confrontation to approach these dialogues?
Yeah, so sometimes it really depends on what you want out of the conversation. And I really only speak to people who feel like they are not getting what they want out of a conversation. If you like battling, and both people like battling, and the battle of wits and zingers, and it's enjoyable, I say keep doing that. And it's only when you feel like you're at an impasse, you're stuck, you don't know how to get to make the next move, you don't know how to connect with this person, that I would advocate for these kinds of practices where you can really start to think about other ways to approach that person so that you do make progress.
So you've eliminated almost half of the country on the East Coast because they like to have conflict and like to yell. I grew up out there, so it was very heated dialogues.
And I'm married to a woman from Philadelphia, so who's both Italian and Irish, so I think she...
You completely. I can empathize with you. do you recommend any or do you have any advice for those coming from different cultures? And I know you said you speak predominantly towards those who are conflict aversive. What do you recommend for those with different cultural backgrounds as they dialogue?
Yeah, so when things go off the rails, I often find that there's two different languages. You know, if you're both on the East Coast and you're hashing it out and things are going okay, but they're just really loud, that's fine. It's really when the cultures clash where my method of resolving or moving forward in a conversation clashes, or you don't hear what I'm trying to say. And so we try to use our own languages to speak to another person that has a completely different language. And that's when we need to think about the skills of, you know, asking the right questions, trying to build that common language between you so that you can talk about the same thing. Because most of the time when you're speaking across cultural boundaries, you're speaking in words that the other person is interpreting in very different ways, and we have to bridge those gaps.
I would almost think, Buster, that those Italian-Irish folks from Philadelphia and their very expressive ability to ability to be very expressive and loud and that sort of thing is almost healthier in a disagreement than, well, we out here in Utah, we're all very nice to each other. And I would venture to say maybe a little passive and then even passive aggressive, which I would think is more difficult to have a productive disagreement about or with someone like that.
It's super interesting because I could go to the East Coast and still see plenty of conflict avoidance. Right? There are certain kinds of arguments that happen, but if you ask people about their feelings, about what they really want, about what they secretly desire, they'll clam right up. So there are different conversations, different topics that are culturally sort of above, you know, allowed, and then there are some that are just not allowed. And so it's ones under the surface that really, you know, grow over time and make us feel frustrated and anxious. And it makes us feel like we can't express ourselves. So, yes, I do think that there is definitely more conflict avoidance on the West Coast. But I think it's on both coasts. And if you go and you have conversations about religion or politics or, gender identity stuff or, you know, all these other things where racism, you'll get shut right down if you talk about those things on the East Coast or the West Coast.
Yes, yes. Are there arguments that aren't even worth having? And if so, how do you identify those?
Yeah, there's really, it's a choice, right? So every disagreement, in order to make it productive, it does take energy. It does take some kind of intrinsic interest for you to want to go and connect and learn about this topic. If there is none of that, then I would say it's not worth doing. I think there's other sort of edge case that you could run into is when it's just too hard. Your skill level in the conversation isn't at the point where you can have the conversation about, you know, racism at the dinner table with your uncle or about religion with your grandmother. You know, some of them are just too hard, and you have to sort of wait, build up your skills over time, and come back to it in a month or a year, because these things don't go away. They'll be around for a long time.
So if I hear you correctly, we probably shouldn't use the holiday dinner table to open up that can of worms and practice some of these skills.
You can. It's really if you want to invest that energy. And I do advocate for choosing a conversation that you think is within your skill level, I guess, and approaching it confidently and with the expectation that it could be enjoyable. And bringing another person in, helping build that experience so that you can talk about something that's been repressed for a while, that just hasn't been a good productive conversation about it. So pick one or two and focus on those. Just a lot of us jump into the deep end, and then we don't know what we're doing, and then we climb right up. And like you said earlier, we end up putting up our defenses, and then things go off the rails.
You mentioned it twice already, the recognizing your own skill level and your own readiness to have those conversations. And that's probably the more self-reflective aspect that we need to come into prior to those, whether it's the holiday conversations or a conversation at work. Are we ready for those? What are we trying to get something out of it? Are we not? Are we trying to listen? So forth. How do we get into that place of readiness and skill acquisition?
Yeah, so one of the things that I talk about is thinking about what feels threatened to you. When you think about a conversation that's just gone poorly over and over again, what is your personal value that has felt threatened? Like, what do you feel like that person is not respecting? What do you feel like they are endangering? And think about that value and see if you can approach the conversation from the perspective of that, what thing that you really care about, instead of as a conversation about what they're doing wrong. So say, like, you can bring up a conversation about why it's really important for you that everyone gets taken care of, or everyone has health insurance, or, you know, whatever it happens to be, or everyone has the ability to self-defend themselves. Like, whatever it is that you think is really important, bring up that topic from a position of, I think this is important, instead of about what they are doing wrong and what they need to change their mind about.
Our guest is Buster Benson. His book is Why Are We Yelling? The Art of Productive Disagreement. So, Buster, you have been in the throes of writing this book for about 3 years. You've sort of posted blogs about it, all along the way. And now you've gotten some great accolades from such people as Adam Grant. Way to go. Adam Grant's such a superstar. We love him. And Daniel Pink and a lot of other people. And what do you think the twist on your book is that is making them love it so much that other maybe publications about disagreement haven't touched on?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the twist is that most of the books about disagreement are about becoming more rational or more persuasive. And my approach is not about neither of those things. It's not about removing the emotion from a conversation, because emotions are the things that point to what is most important to us. And so we need to keep that part in there, because it's, you know, that's what makes life worth living, is just to fight for these values that we believe in. And on the other hand, it's not just about persuasion and sales and negotiation. I mean, we have to still care about these outcomes and not just coming up with a deal or, you know, a compromise. And so I think the book, in my mind, what makes it unique is that it sort of carries this ability to allow people to still feel their feelings and not see disagreement as purely a sales process. It's something that can happen around a dinner table, that can happen with a walk with your friends, that can happen with people that you care about.
Mm, I like that. Okay. So when you talk about personal value, I was thinking, well, what's my personal value that gets that I feel most hampers my ability to participate in a productive disagreement? And I'll use the example of my stepdad, who I love dearly. But I learned something, and that is that he is very, well, he's very well informed. And anytime I get into an argument about with him about something that he's more informed on than I am, I get trampled. I just get stamped out. And so I decided not even to go there with him. And then I learned that, oh, guess what? I'm more informed about some topics than he is, at which point he backs down so quickly. And he says, huh, well, I don't really know about that. I'll have to look into that. And it's such an interesting dynamic between us. It really uncovered. I thought he was more informed about everything. He's very smart than I am, but it turns out he's not. So could you speak to that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's about you understanding what his language of disagreement is and sort of adapting your conversation to his. And I think that's really important for us to think about is, you know, everyone has a different way of talking about what's true and what's not true. I mean, he's really seeing it through the lens of research and evidence and facts. And that's a whole world of disagreement that I think we do have to think about a lot. And then there are other worlds of disagreement where it could be entirely about what you think is important and what you think is urgent, what you think we should be prioritizing, that doesn't speak to, that you can't go look up the report on this because it's really personal and subjective. And so I think, you know, when we are, some of us are speaking more from what's important and what's subjectively, you know, should be prioritized to us. And some people are speaking from like the hard, cold facts and about what the studies are. And so if you want to have, if you want to build that connection, you can step into their world and be like, okay, I'm going to talk your language. And, you know, that's one way to do it. Another way is to invite him in to talk to about the world in your language, too.
And Lynn, I might also recommend, and I've not written a book, but I always start, when I start having conversations with informative people like that, I always say, well, research says, and then,
then you bang something up.
Any advice for me when I have those kind of conversations?
Well, so when we oftentimes point to studies and research and say like, hey, I read an article in, you know, this journal, oftentimes it's filtered through the media a few times and you may not even remember what it was about. So it can get you into a sticky situation when, if you do go look at the study, it doesn't say what you're saying. So I would say, you know, you make a prediction about what you can find in the research and then go look it up together. And then you could turn it into a collaboration instead of a, hey, here's my side of the story and here's your side of the story.
That sounds much more intelligent perspective. Thank you, Buster. So then when we are looking at strategies to really kind of decipher people's value systems, you know, whether it's information and research, facts, or emotion, how do we take that time in our conversation to delve into and, you know, understand that?
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, oftentimes we do feel like we have to do all this work before we go into a disagreement and be perfectly prepared for it. I think there is another way to do it, which is let's just talk about story. stories and talk about, you can ask the other person questions about how they came to believe what they believe, why it's been important to them, how it's been useful in their lives, who they respect that, you know, exemplifies these kinds of positions, and just learn about them. And that way you actually don't have to do the research beforehand, and you can build that connection and the trust that is required to then tackle a topic together. Because we oftentimes neglect the fact that we can't actually have a conversation until there is this sort of agreement about trust and respect between us. Mm. And you can do that by asking really broad, open questions that don't have leading answers.
I'm sure for you, just like for me, that has probably come from some experience. And has that, where did that come from for you, where you had to learn that perhaps the hard way?
Yeah, when our entire lives are sort of filled with lessons about this, I think. In my case, I've been a product leader at startups like Amazon and Twitter and Slack, and my job has always been to bring people together, some people right out of college, some people that have been working on things for 30 years, and have facilitate a conversation between them so that they come up with plans and do the work that has the outcome that the leadership of the company wants and that the customers and the users actually want. So I've always had to put aside my own agenda and see, like, okay, what can we all do to make a step forward? We can't just talk about this and fight about this forever. We have to do something. And that has sort of been my own path towards understanding, like, you know, let's not get stuck. And that's the most important thing, is just don't get stuck thinking that it's futile and give up.
Mm. Such a great work that you spent a couple of years of your life on, and a contribution to our culture and greater community. The book is Why Are We Yelling? It's The Art of Productive Disagreement. Our guest is Buster Benson. Thanks so much, Buster, for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Take care. Okay. Well, are you armed and ready and equipped to go into the holidays with your, you know, in-laws or?
No, I feel barely equipped to argue with myself sometimes. I know for me this morning I was arguing that I couldn't get out of the cold or out of the house to run in the cold. So I lost already today.
Well, if you can't argue against yourself, you don't stand much chance of arguing against
anyone
else. Well,
Buster's advice would be to listen to others more. So.
Yes. Yeah. Wow, listening. We have a hard time doing that. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcast, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.